This is the Average Guy Network, and you have found Home Gadget Geeks, show number 649 with Kevin Schoonover, recorded on June 5th, 2025. Here on Home Gadget Geeks, we cover all the favorite tech gadgets that find their way into your home, news, reviews, product updates, and conversation. All for the average tech guy. I'm your host, Jim Collison, broadcasting live from the AverageGuy.tv studios here in beautiful Bellevue, Nebraska. Got a little warm on Monday. Thunderstorms came through. Kevin, you got to love this time of year. You know, June, we're getting close to the bad stuff, right? But May in Nebraska, May in Minnesota, pretty great, right?
Very nice. Yeah. Temperatures have been very good. The only thing, have you, today was okay. We've been getting hit with a lot of the smoke from the Canadian wildfires. That was actually kind of bad on Monday or Tuesday, I think it was, but it rained and cleared up. So we're working through it.
Yeah. Real hazy. Canadians, keep your own smoke. I mean, geez, yeah, you can't just keep it on the border or something. Jeez, would you? So, it's coming this way. We got even a little whiplash of it. It was coming down. And then with the jet stream, it came back around at us. And when it came around the second time, it was at ground level. So it was super hazy here, but, we too had some rain that kind of helps clean it up. It's a good thing that stuff's not permanent. Well, we'll post the show with some world-class show notes, and then we'll have a few notes out there tonight. A few links you want to follow out at theaverageguy.tv. Big thanks to our Patreon subscribers. For those of you who do that every single month, thank you. If you want to join the team, theaverageguy.tv/Patreon will get you there. I have a $5 plan. If you want to jump in 1 month or as long as you want, whatever, many of you have been doing it for a long time. Thanks. Appreciate that. Helps me do what I do. It helps me what we're going to talk about first, Kevin, here in a second, but hold on. We'll tease that here for just a second. And then another thanks for using the affiliate link posted on the site. If you go to theaverageguy.tv, upper right-hand corner, there's just a red link there. If you click through, it'll take you to Amazon. And then the network here, the Home Gadget Geeks, takes advantage of that through Amazon. A few of you have been doing that. I appreciate you guys doing that. Click through it. Check it out today, theaverageguy.tv. Big thanks to TJ Huddleston, who joined me last week from hometech.fm. Always good to have TJ on. And of course, he is a third of Gavin and Seth over there at hometech.fm. If you haven't checked it out yet, add that to your podcast player. At least listen to it once. It's a lot like this show, except super nerdy on the code side of things. So check them out today. I mentioned him before. Kevin Schoonover is with me. Kevin, longtime home server show guy. We've spent time together for new folks to the program. We've spent time together in Indianapolis with Dave McCabe and the old home server friends, and you knew Mike Howard and all those guys as well. Kevin, welcome back.
Thanks. Nice to be back.
Yeah, good to have you. Good to see you upright. I mean, I think at some point, any day you can walk away from is a good day, right? You're doing well?
Yes, it is. Okay. Doing well. Had some health issues earlier in the year and seem to be on a full recovery now. So good. For the old guys out there, just my word of advice is don't fall down. And then life's better when you don't fall down.
Just as a side note, I was working with our local university. We were hiring IT folks from them, and they were showing us some of the research work they do. And keeping us or older people from falling down is actually a really big problem, especially in facilities or places where a lot of older folks congregate or live, so to speak. And they were actually, and this was years ago now, I'm sure we're much better at this now, but of sewing sensors into clothes and then doing predictive analytics to say, hey, you're wobbling a little too much. We need to put you on a watch so that you don't, or whatever, to kind of keep you from falling. My aunt just fell and they didn't do a hip replacement. Oftentimes they break a hip. And that's kind of sometimes the beginning of the end. They put a rod in there and she's fine. But yeah, we got to be at our age. Those kinds of things, maybe your age, not mine, but they matter. Anyways, you're looking great and we're glad to see. Okay. For years, you've come on the show and we've talked about hard drives. And I had Doug Milburn 2 weeks ago from 45 Drives on here. We're talking about drives and stuff. And I'll just say again, sorry, in that show, I said 5 1/4. It's 3.5. I knew that. I don't know why I said 5 1/4 the whole time. I guess I was thinking about the form factor. for it. But you, a long time ago, turned me on to Go Hard Drives or right, the kind of the discount. I don't want to say discount, but used drive space. And so I got to tell you, just this just came in the mail today. And we talk about Patreon, right? Some of those kinds of things. I've been watching prices. We're going to talk a little bit about this here. I've been watching prices. And, of course, with the tariff stuff, they've been all over the place. But I did find, and I think you and I have been kind of, that $10 a terabyte seems to be the sweet spot for drives. Mm-hmm. And so it came today.
Oh, nice.
18 terabyte MDD.
Yep.
It's their enterprise, which I don't know the difference. They have a surveillance and a NAS that's red, right?
Yep.
And then they're all the same drives, right? I don't know.
Possibly.
Yeah. 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 18 terabytes. It's got 256 meg of cache, which some of the newer drives of this size are coming with 512, right?
Yep.
So it's from a cache perspective, maybe a little bit underpowered. But it was right at the price point. So $180. I've seen them as cheap as $170 now. But and let me show my screen really quick. Let me just show you how fast this changes, and then I'll take your thought on this. So let's go here. We'll share the screen. This is the drive I bought just Monday, and it's already gone to $269. It was $179. Wow. This drive, the same thing, $179.
Yeah.
And now refurbished with a 5-year warranty. By the way, same exact drive, 5 years. Renewed. They say renewed. I'll talk about that here in a second. But jump. So I guess, Kevin, I mean, and I bought this on Amazon. You can go to gohardrives.com and buy them direct from them. I like the Amazon because it's got free returns. I think Go Hard Drive does as well. So things are moving fast in that space. And one of the things, and the question I want to ask you here, we'll drop this screen sharing for a second. I plugged this thing and I talked to Doug about them flashing the firmware in here. And he was like, his answer was kind of, I don't know if you, that's pretty protected. If you could do that, right. Plug this drive in before the show, spun up Crystal Disk. It had 1 hour, 1 hour of runtime. Now, it's 18 terabytes, so it's a fairly new drive, right? This probably hasn't been out there that long. Oftentimes, we get these drives because they have been in a data center somewhere, and they're coming off, and they make them cheap, right? Do you think it had 8 startups in 1 hour? Do you think that's real? That's the question I want to ask you. Think it's real?
As of right now, yeah, I think it is. So a lot of the drives that Go Hard Drives and some of these other guys get, and when they say renewed, is a lot of times these drives are, so obviously that is either a WD or a Seagate or a Toshiba drive, because that's the last three guys making drives. So you could probably track it down to who that is. Yeah. But where Go Hard Drives gets a lot of their drives is from OEMs. So Western Digital sells drives to Dell, and Dell might have them lock down firmware, change certain settings to work best with their RAID controllers. There are some enhancements that get made that way. So there, I can't say it's true in all cases, but there are many cases where Go Hard Drive would take a Western Digital drive from Dell, and if they can get the original Western Digital firmware for it, they'll update them and change them and turn it back into that drive. As far as the hours go, I'd have to kind of research it to recall, but I think Go Hard Drive got in trouble a few years ago. They claimed inadvertently because they were updating firmware on some SSDs, and in the process of updating the firmware, it was wiping out the drive on time. So, and that seemed odd to me because, I have several SSDs that come with their own utilities that let you update the firmware, and they never reset the drive, on time. Yeah. So, obviously it happened. There was a little lawsuit about it, and, it got straightened away, but, at the end of the day, I have never had a bad drive from those guys. Yeah. And or I should say I've never had a catastrophic failure with those guys. And one drive I had that started to get grown defect issues with it, they replaced it under their warranty. And like you say, you know, they buy them at such a volume.
Yeah.
They have an idea of the attrition they're going to see just through natural dying of them, and they hold out some. So they always have drives to replace them with. So yeah, I've had good luck with those guys.
Yeah. And I think the larger the drive, right, the less hours you're going to have on them. And I think if you can find them in that $10 price point, $10 per terabyte price point. So I bought this drive and I was thinking I got the deal of my life. And then this one showed up. So this is, I talked about, this is the NAS. It's the same MDD, right? Mm-hmm. It's just, instead of it saying enterprise, it says NAS on it. And same kind of drive, same SATA, same stats, same everything, I think. And then if I go over here to the buying options, it's 169. So that's actually below the $10 a terabyte price point that's on there. Now, these are not, you know, I'm not seeing this everywhere. So right. I think right now you've got to be a really select buyer on that. But I think 16, 18, 20, 22, now 22 is still brand new for a lot. You're not going to, you'll find a 20 in this used configuration, but I would think 18, maybe some 16s, some 18s and 20, they just haven't been out long enough to be mm-hmm. in data centers. Like you said, they may have been sitting somewhere and OEM said, we're not going to sell these things. We don't want to sell them.
Yep.
They offload them at cost or whatever. And these companies pick them up and resell them. I will say, I mean, it came in a bag, came in a static bag, comes wrapped in bubble wrap. I mean, this is still a used drive, so to speak, right? Of course you get the hard drive, you know, you get the hard drive things in there and it comes in a nondescript box. And so it's not fancy. It's, you're not going to get the OEM or the retail experience with it. Like you said, you haven't had them go bad. I've been running. I bet I have 12 of these now from mm-hmm. four terabytes to 10. I just picked up two 10 terabytes. All of them have had 5-year warranties. I haven't had to exercise one yet
mm-hmm.
on there. So,
another resource you can look at, and I think this is the one I've just started dabbling into a little bit. It is, diskprices.com. It's basically a scrubber app that, pulls from almost all the Amazon websites. Yeah. So US, yeah. UK, yeah. all of them. And it'll give you a good idea. And like you just said, you know, the 10 buck a terabyte kind of range seems to be the sweet spot these days. So kind of keeps us all in track there.
Just know this diskprices.com uses affiliate links to support itself. So mm-hmm. as soon as you click on it, you're giving your Amazon,
yep.
your Amazon, what do they call that? Cookie. Your Amazon cookie is set for whatever length of time that is. Disk prices. In fact, I use that for a long time. Diskprices.com. That's what from sometimes I like to go out there and monitor. If you have a SAS setup, you can get some SAS drives right now are
yes.
extremely cheap. Why is that, Kevin? Why you know the industry. Why are those cheaper than regular SATA hard drives?
The market is still kind of shifting and you know, the hard drives are always going to be the capacity point. And SAS people still kind of look at it from a performance point of view. I don't know that there's a huge cost difference from a vendor point of view. If you were comparing the latest, you know, 24 terabyte SAS versus 24 terabyte SATA, they're probably in the same price, you know, ballpark wise. I think where you see SAS coming down in price afterwards is kind of the go hard drive, you know, thing of Dell, HP, Lenovo, you know, EMC, NetApp, all the big storage guys. If they hit a price point of 18 terabyte or 14 terabyte and they're like, hey, we're not going to sell any of those anymore, it's just too small a capacity for us, they blow them out. So I think you just see SAS getting cycled faster than you do with SATA. So therefore you get better deals on them. And there are plenty of places, if nobody's dabbled in SAS stuff, LSI RAID controllers, which is owned by Broadcom now. There's several folks out on eBay that will sell you one with the proper IT-based firmware. So there's IR firmware, which is RAID firmware. Most of us really don't want to do hardware RAID anymore. Prefer to do software RAID or ZFS or, you know, Unraid doing its own thing. Yeah. So you can, you know, if you do a web search for LSI RAID controllers on eBay, you'll find guys who have taken the somewhat irritating steps to get the proper IT firmware on it, and you're good to go. You know, you get proper cable set and you're off and running.
Yeah. It just got me thinking, you know, back to our old home server days, you know, that I think right now may be a nice time to be looking. They're not everywhere, but can find some good deals. And I think these are all pre-tariff. Like, these are drives that have been in the United States for a while somewhere. They were already brought in these, and I'm guessing at this point, I don't have any inside information, but it just may be a time, you know, that we, you might want to pick these up before, if you're in that space or you need some drive space, that may be the time to get it done.
Well, it's not going to dominate, but we were talking as we were rolling into the show here. There's still quite a few home server kind of user groups out there, and people are discovering things like Plex, and they're discovering things like Unraid, and how easy it is to back up. And it's reminiscent of what we kind of saw as things were ramping down on our home server days. It was breaking into kind of two camps, one of doing home server or doing media service. But then the other side of the fence that's continued to grow is the home lab thing of, hey, to hone my IT skills, I can go out and buy a used Dell server and some Cisco switches, and I can get my CCNA and I can get my Dell certification, and, you know, I can better my IT skills. Yeah. So there's a lot of good stuff with that.
Yeah, I can throw VMware on there, although they've had some hiccups.
Proxmox is the way to go these days.
And Proxmox has just taken over in that space for sure. I've been messing around with Open Media Vault, which is a Linux-based version of that. Mm-hmm. Kind of maintained by maybe one or two guys. It's not a giant project, but one that it has sharpened my Linux skills of being able to do some things I just didn't have to do in Windows. Mm-hmm. And so a little frustrating at first because I'm not a big Linux guy, but understanding the way they do distributions and understanding some going in and some script, you know, writing a script or two, or stealing it from somebody else. Let's just be honest, right?
There's a lot of helpful folks in the Linux community. So
terminal connection. There's a lot out there. You just got to do a little bit of reading, but Open Media Vault has been one that's been good. I think they're on version 7. And this may be, it's one of those things I feel like I got there just at the right time, because 6 on back, you know, you look at the forums and you're like, oh boy, they really struggled a little bit to get some things going. And now for a guy like me, I mean, I'm not super technical, and I got Open Media Vault up and running on a pretty good box. Well, towards the end of the show, we're going to talk a little bit about repurposing some PC hardware. I'm going to ask you some questions on that as well. So let's dig in on the Fixit community. Kevin, I didn't see this coming from you, just to be honest. When you sent me the notes earlier this week, I was thinking about, you know, we always think of a maker space, but I think with all things that may be coming in our economy in the United States, anyways, I can really speak to that. We may be in a situation here where we might want to try to fix a few things, right? We've been in a consumer mode for a lot of years. Just buy it. It's cheaper just to buy it, right? And then to try to fix it. Do you feel like we may be moving away from that? And you've gotten involved in some fix-it spaces, is what I'm going to call for this show.
Sure.
Show me a little bit, or talk to me a little bit about what we're
yeah. We're so doing. I live in Washington County, Minnesota, and you know, I'll frame things from what happens locally here. I hope it happens in most other people's states and counties as well. But so the fix-it clinics are things that I volunteer with, and all the folks who are at the fix-it clinics, it's a volunteer kind of thing. We tend to do them quarterly at different, usually libraries or facilities in the county. But where this came from was Washington County's Environmental Center. So I can never remember the time frame on it, but it coincidentally, as we started getting away from projection TVs and large tube type TVs, we started moving to LCD TVs. I always little irritation of the number of times you would see a 32 inch tube type TV laying in the ditch because somebody didn't want to get it recycled, didn't want to pay the amount of money to get it recycled. And my county was one of the first ones to jump on, well, let's, for residents of the county, let's have electronic recycling, especially at the time, 32, 35 inch tube type TVs, rear projection sets, all these big, monstrous things full of not good chemicals and such. And that's blossomed at this place too. One of the other phenomenal things that the Environmental Center did was any kinds of paints or varnishes or lubricants or any other things from that point of view, instead of just taking them and seeing that they got disposed of properly, they have a center there. So if you're going to paint your bathroom and you want it to be a certain color white, but you don't really care, go over to the Environmental Center and see how many cans of white paint you can find because they're in a showroom over there. So the roots of this, reusing, use it instead of throwing it away is where things took off from, of trying to reduce waste. At the clinics, when somebody shows up with something, first thing they do is weigh it because we'd like to get an idea of how much stuff we're saving from having it go in the recycling bin. But to your point, one of the underlying things is changing this perspective with people of fixing it versus replacing it, and the number of things that actually are really quite repairable versus things that have run their course and just need to be disposed of. We tend to frame these fix-it clinics as, so you got a group of people there to help, but we try to help teach the person how to do the repair themselves, kind of take that mindset of, hey, you can do this. I'm here to help you. Let's talk through it. Let's figure out what's wrong with it. It also exposes you as a person who likes to fix stuff to, expand your knowledge base. And, we quickly identify, there's guys in the Washington County group here. There's a guy who I got to talk to him next time about this. He fixes sewing machines. And when people realize he's going to be at one of the clinics, there's a line of people with sewing machines for him to work on and fix. One of the guys is really an expert soldering guy. So most of the heavier technical stuff goes to him. He's a real sharp double E as well. I'm kind of a jack of all trades.
Double E means electrical engineering.
Electrical engineer. Yep. Much to my surprise, one of the most popular items we see are lamps. I have never fixed so many lamps in my life. And if you think about lamps being something maybe you would just throw away, the lamps we see come into here, they're pieces of furniture. They've matched the decor of someone's home. So you're either putting a new plug on the end, you're putting a new cord on it. The single way or three way switch, those tend to go bad on them. I fixed one last fall at a center that I had to be really careful with it because it was stained glass. I think it was quite an expensive lamp, and we're looking at it and realizing, the cord went up through the lamp up to the socket, but it, I should have took a picture of it at the time. Imagine a nut, a hex nut that's about an inch long with a notch cut out of the middle of it. And that screwed down to hold the base of the lamp together. The cord came up and through that side outlet, and then the stained glass shade screwed to the top of that. And we're looking at it, and that nut had broken in half. And I said, hey, if I was you, I'd go to the local hardware store, match up the size, take a Dremel tool and make the cut. If you want to bring the nut back, I've got my Dremel tool. We can kind of work through it if you like. And as they were walking away, it's kind of the last thing of fixing is, did you check YouTube and did you check Amazon? And sure enough, I hit Amazon with, you know, how do you describe a nut that's cut in the middle with a slot, and boom, it pops up. They got them. You know, as much as Amazon irritates the heck out of me, they've got this stuff. Right. So, you know, it is this function of, I was able to point them at the right deal. They showed up at a clinic a couple months after that, and hey, the lamp's working great. It's wonderful. So it is that good, you know, that kind of good feeling of helping people. You know, and again, the case of lamps, it is a, family heirloom. It is a piece of furniture, so to say.
Yeah. Do you think we'll see a change in antique furniture where now it may be more cost effective to upgrade, retrofit, or just fix, furniture than to buy new and pay whatever we're going to pay here in the future? Do you see any trends move in that direction?
So it's interesting because, not so much. We've only had a couple things at the Fix-It clinics from that point of view. Furniture's a little big to come into those. I do know a person who, so we went through a phase where when I was younger and I grew up in a rural area, I remember my mom taking furniture to get reupholstered. You know, getting things reupholstered was a big thing. And then that really kind of died off as we found, and you know, I think we've all seen this, is there's good furniture out there and there's cheap furniture out there. And it doesn't make a lot of sense to reupholster cheap furniture. But I do kind of see a trend where, especially on Facebook Marketplace or the Buy Nothing groups in Facebook, of, you know, people are quick to point out, hey, I just want to get rid of this sofa. It's really nice. You know, it's a, you know, bring two guys to carry this because it's really heavy. So I think we are starting to see a lot more activity around, hey, instead of, you know, getting the bargain basement furniture kind of stuff, I want to get something good that's going to last.
Yeah. Yeah. Some of in your clinics, on the website, and I put the link in chat, it'll be in the show notes as well. Accepted items include antique radios, blenders, camping lanterns, clothing, or other textiles for mending, right? Mm-hmm. Must be clean and dry. That's interesting. That actually, my daughter, Sammy, is really good at doing that kind of stuff. Dremel tool, DVD player, fan, flashlight, hair dryer, lamps, paper shredders, there's an interesting one. Sewing machines, you mentioned, steam mop, stereo, telephone, toaster oven, toasters, and toys. Some items not to bring: e-cigarettes or any other tobacco products, guns, knives, or anything that could be considered a weapon, and oversized items, maybe you're talking about. You must be able to carry the items in and out of the Fix-It clinic. So it gives folks some idea of what you work on and what you don't work on. That's in there. Do you find, do people have to wait to come in? Is it a pretty easy, they get in, get right to it? I mean, do they bring their own tools? Are you providing the tools for them? How's that work?
So each of the guys, we tend to bring all our own tools, and, the county has built up over time to have its own set of stuff as well. And the county has stepped up with lamp cords and plugins and some of the sockets for repairing lamps. People, as you know, come, you know, first in line gets in first. We try to, you know, we've gotten good enough as a group that we kind of know each other all by first names now. And the folks that coordinate these have kind of learned what all our skills are. So they'll kind of roll in and say, hey, we've got one of these out front, or, you know, who's up for looking at that? Or, you know, and kind of back to the sewing machine one, is everybody's waiting for this guy because he does sewing machines. But you know, we'll try, and then we'll try to hand off too, is if you get, deep into something and you're not making progress, you'll hand off and try and grab it to one of the other guys, as well.
Okay. So varying opportunities that are there. That's got to be a pretty fun. I mean, if you're a tinkerer and you like tinkering with all kinds of different, you know, styles and equipment and stuff, that's got to be fairly satisfying, right? Saturday afternoon, right? A couple hours,
oh, yeah.
4 or 5 hours fixing stuff.
No, it's good. I just, if you check your email, I sent you a picture that you can show of what the feeling actually feels like.
Okay. Let me pull that up here. Keep going.
So you mentioned sewing. I tell you, that is, you know, the sewing function. There are folks who bring in, you know, zippers and hemming and it is really a lost art. You know, as a kid, I learned to sew because I grew up on a farm, and there are many times if I was heading out to go do chores and there was a hole in the knee of my pants, it was up to me to be the one who would stitch it up because mom was busy with stuff. So, mm-hmm. you know, we've run into a lot of that. Real kind of touching at the last, that is how I feel.
when it works again, you're like, look,
ta-da!
Fire.
At the last fix-it event we were at, a younger woman showed up with a kind of a big bag of stuff, and she was like, "Hey, you know, I just got a new job. I really can't afford new clothes for all this. Is it too much to ask if you got, you know?" And when I say you guys, it's mostly the gals who are running the sewing machine areas, and they cordoned off a. There was a little side room. They let that be her changing room, and they walked through the whole bag of clothes she had, taking them in and, you know, making alterations for her and, you know, working through the process there. So it, you know, it definitely is a, you know, very heavy recycle reuse kind of thing.
Where would you go if you wanted to see if you had one of these in your area? Where do you start? Like, yeah, where do you start?
So, you know, look to your local county. I think the map that comes up with the, so it's interesting, Washington County, where I live, there's a couple of folks who kind of helped foster a lot of this. And some of this apparently mirrors a lot of what happens in the EU. A lot of the countries in the EU that have environmental centers, before you can throw out a major appliance, you have to try and fix it. Mm. So they'll take anything because they don't want you throwing it in the garbage. But there basically are, in many countries in Europe, there are fix-it centers attached right to the environmental center. So you can pop in, try it out, have a look at it. So I'd say to start with, reach out to your local county environmental area. Any of the, you know, the recycling kind of folks tend to be good for this kind of stuff as well. You know, later on, I've got some links here for like some of the computer related places. We've got, you know, one very good one over in Minneapolis called Free Geeks. They focus specifically around electronics, computers, and there are, I forget the name of the program now, but they're tied very tightly into a program that helps get computers in the hands of people who can't afford computers. And what has happened, you know, so you think about computers. So I'll hop back here for a second. When I first did the some of the fix-it clinics, the very first one I showed up for is I had a monitor, a keyboard, a mouse. I had USB sticks. I had all kinds of stuff because I knew everybody coming through that door was going to have a computer. Nobody comes through the door with a computer. And I think because the environmental center is quick to take computers, and computers are something where, you know, I've run this thing for 5 years. It's getting slow. I just want a new computer. So they tend not to get fixed. What Free Geeks has embraced is, you know, we used to need a Windows PC because you ran Windows apps and you ran Office and you ran all this other stuff. Every kid in school right now has a Chromebook because everything is web-based. So what Free Geeks does is they have some standards about laptops and PCs, but they load Linux Mint on it. And, you know, a fairly acceptable Windows PC or something that you probably wouldn't want to run Windows on anymore is very effective running with Linux Mint. and they teach classes on, you know, making sure people are comfortable with the use of Linux. And so it works into the environment nice that way. Free Geek is also a place that has volunteer aspects of it, so you can help out with things. And Free Geek is also a spot, you know, getting back to the skills-based aspect of things. They teach soldering classes. So, you know, for you know, the things that you used to learn in school, but you don't learn in school anymore. Yeah. You know, there can be some neat places to pick those kind of things up as well.
Kevin, I went to school in the 80s. We weren't soldering in the 80s either. So, although I know, you know, and actually that's soldering is one of those things you can pick up pretty fast. Once you understand the way heat transfers on stuff and how you can pull that solder in and mm-hmm. what you're doing it. It's the same thing like soldering on copper pipe. That used to be a mystery to me. Yep. Until I understood heat dynamics. And then you're like, oh yeah, that warm it up on the other side and have it suck it in from the, you know, warm it up on one side and it'll suck in from the other and run it around and, you know, flux and some of that stuff helps too. But a little bit of practice and those things work. We have here in Omaha, we've got a, Goodwill or one of those Salvation Army, I forget who it is, runs a, they consolidated their technology distribution into one place in downtown Omaha. And so like when they get computers and laptops and stuff like that in, I've always been discouraged because I go in there and they're just all kind of haphazardly set out, not in a way that's even useful in some ways. You can't turn them on. There's nothing to maintain. I've often thought like, man, I should give them a Saturday afternoon where all I do is go in there, make them useful, you know, set them up, plug them in, make them useful, put swap parts, get some stuff that, you know, like, okay, this is going to be a, this is going to be a donation. Like it's going to give its parts away to other things. Cause whatever's wrong with it or other, you've always been on the shows you've been on, you've always been the key, you know, you've always brought some kind of software tools that we used,
Glary utilities.
I still use those all the time. Yep. That's your favorite. And I still use it today. But that would be a good, I kind of think, man, that would scratch the itch sometimes. There's Saturdays where I'm sitting around here. I'm like, what can I tear apart just so I can put it back together kind of thing, right? And I don't want to take a bunch of donations. I could, the other thought I thought I could do or I should do is in the community, we all the time on Facebook, we have a local Facebook group and they're like, hey, I'll come haul your junk away. And they're charging for that. But it would be interesting to say, hey, I'll come get your IT stuff, your computers, whatever. Although, to be honest with you, we may be in an age, we're not seeing a lot of desktops anymore, right? No. Maybe some laptops. And, you know, there's an x86 version of Chrome, you know, of Chromium that you can install as well, make that work. We may be in an age where those things are less, like when we see the PC, we just see it less and less. I don't know, any thoughts on that, Kevin?
No, I agree. The, you know, what's interesting, I look at, so my son's a sophomore in college and I look at folks his age. The only desire for
a laptop,
he's perfectly happy with the Chromebook. And then here at home, he has a desktop, but it's a gaming PC. So it's really focused around gaming. His roommate had mainly used an iPad or a MacBook. And then he had a fairly nice Lenovo laptop that was his gaming laptop. So, you know, the traditional desktop use just really isn't part of the thing anymore. Yeah, I see that drifting off pretty rapidly. And, you know, you think of the work environments out there, it's all laptops, MacBooks, you know, it's very seldom any of the other stuff. So,
and maybe that's the environment, like, although those are getting sold and they're showing up on eBay used, but maybe some of those third life equipment, right? Somebody bought, you know, it was an enterprise piece of equipment first. It got pushed down to a reseller on eBay. They resold it for a couple $100 or whatever. And then eventually runs out of life and it's ending up in the thrift stores or in the, you know, the recycle centers or whatever those kinds of things to get those. I don't, I don't find the laptops as easy from a recycle standpoint. I know you can take them apart and you get some stuff out. They're just not as much fun as the desktops were. You know, you could there's just more space maybe.
Yeah, and there's not as much you can do with them, and yeah. I kind of go back and forth on that. You know, there was a couple of guys who, you know, kind of the whole software router thing, running pfSense on something is doing it on a laptop so that you can just kind of poke it away and let it sit there and run. And there were
they're powerful enough now, right, to do that. So that's great.
Yep. And there were a couple of models. You know, we used to have those workstation style laptops that had actually room for a couple of hard drives. And, you know, some guys were picking those up for like a little server of some type to, you know, dabble in server without taking up too much space. But yeah, it's kind of moved around a little bit with those. When you mentioned the kind of the haphazard aspect of it, that's exactly what the guys at Free Geeks is. Every Wednesday, they blast Facebook with, hey, here's what we're going to have on sale. Here's what the showroom looks like. Everything's been tested. Everything is up and ready to go. The thing that surprises me a little bit about some of the things that they do well with is there, I don't know if you've seen this kind of this retro PC kind of thing, is there are folks out there who want to find old computers, you know, old DOS-based computers and dabble with them, play around with them, you know, just for the sake of, you know, making it all work. And, you know, I can't remember the whole joke now about, you know, kids nowadays are worried about this and this. And when I was young, we were worried about IRQ conflicts, you know.
For sure. I remember those days. I remember those days for sure. I watched, there's some YouTube channels where they find, you know, PCs from the 90s that have just been, you know, I'm trying to think of, there's a, ILM used to style the computers for all the graphics, and I forget the name of them. They were like $35,000 computers in the internet. And a guy will find one, and then he'll take it completely apart, scrub it down, glue the pieces back together that are missing, or use Bondo if the pieces are gone, right? And to your Dremel, you know, they're sanding the pieces to make it look good. And they try to return these PCs, including the software, right, back to its kind of original, you know, it becomes kind of a museum piece at that point. And of course, you know, you and I, we're in that age group. Hey, we ran DOS. Like I ran an 8086 or an 8088 computer back in the day. No operating system for the most part. The floppy was it did have an operating system, but. You know, not the way we think of it today.
If you think about some of those machines that popped up in there, it's like, you know, Steve Jobs did have another computer company. It was called Next, and they had some really cool looking stuff. At the same time, you had Silicon Graphics with their Indigo systems.
That's the company, Silicon Graphics.
You had the big workstation guys with those folks. You know, Sun had some really cool workstation things. So, you know, there was a lot of stuff popping around in those areas.
Yeah, it was way more fun to tinker with it and get it running. Then once you get it running, you're kind of like, well, I mean, what am I going to do with it now? there's nothing I can do with it for the most part, you know, in those cases, but it does make for, and would be an interesting, you know, just think about meetups. We'd get together, right, and bring all this equipment in, and some of that stuff would be interesting for the tinkerer, right?
Folks
who want to see an old DOS PC running DOS 3 or something like that. You just don't see that anymore, and that then the hardware is so specific to those. It's not like, yeah, you can emulate it today. That's just not as much fun. You know, you can get all those things in emulation, but running it on the actual equipment that it was designed.
Oh, yeah.
You had mentioned in the notes, back to the repairing of things. You were surprised how repairable Keurig is? How hard to fix? Not a lot of moving parts, I take it.
So, you know, that very first fix-it clinic I was at, one of the second or third items I got was a Keurig coffee maker. Mm-hmm. It wasn't heating up, wasn't working right. And my brain initially went to, this is disposable technology. This is, it's just a circuit board in there that, you know, I'm not going to be able to troubleshoot down. And this is where you kind of get to on fixing a lot of this stuff is, well, is it the circuit board or is there something else going on in there? What I found with Keurigs and those coffee makers in general is what happens with them, almost every one of them, they have a heat tube that heats the water up. And on that heat tube is a little, I actually have one here. It's a thermal switch in line with that. And these thermal switches go bad. And I'm looking at troubleshooting with this gentleman who's been doing it for a long time. He reaches back into his toolbox and he's got a whole box full of these. And he goes, let's take that off, clean off the thermal paste off it, read the part number off it. I grab my soldering iron, replace it, and boom, the Keurig is up and running again. So had nothing to do with the circuitry. It was just a thermal switch that would only open once, you know, things had heated up properly and it was not allowing it to heat up. So some of the designs can be pretty simple. In the same vein, we also find products that are, you know, kind of, you do find dangerous designs out there. At one of the clinics, a couple other guys were working on this. I heard the guy bring it in. It was a Ninja brand toaster oven, and he loved it because it fit on the counter nicely. And one of the guys who was trying to work on it got called to go solder something else. And he said, "Hey, Kev, can you take this apart? We're trying to figure out how to get the cover." A lot of times on this fix it stuff, figuring out how to take the thing apart is the major battle with
it's like listen, in the new technology, right? Getting your tablet apart or like, all right, how do we do it? What do we have to heat? What dance do we need to do to get the thing to pop? Right. Yeah.
So I'm trying to work to get the top off from this toaster oven, and I'm talking to the owner of the toaster oven. And I said, "Hey, I'm sorry, I missed the beginning of this. What happened?" And he said, "Well, you know, I had it on the counter and I plugged it in. I put a pizza in it. I closed the door and the door fell open and then it blew the circuit breaker." And we were trying to figure out, well, what's the relationship between the door falling open and a circuit breaker going? Yeah. And as I'm working on it, the top wouldn't come off, but the side came off. And what do I see on the side of it is there's the spring that was supposed to hold the door open had fallen down, had broken and fallen down on one of the heater elements.
So shorten it out. Yeah.
It made perfect sense, but you also then look at it like, well, who thought this was a good design idea to have a spring the right length that when it fell, it would short out directly against one of the heating elements. So, and of course, in normal fix it fashion, we're kind of like, well, now we know what happened to it, but oh, I don't have any springs. And across the room, I hear this guy, Tom, "I got springs." what do you need? And we fix that's this thing, and out the door he goes with his toaster oven.
He had springs with him. Like
he had springs extra with him. You'd not believe some of that.
Listen, this for a lot of guys who collect these micro gadget. No, it's not the right word, but parts. Like we know who you are.
Yep,
it's not me. I'm not a parts collector, but there are people who do that. This would be the perfect like environment for them to get them organized in some kind of, or just bring them, you know where they're at, right? To go through those kind of, right? Wouldn't that make sense?
Oh yeah. So I bring a small toolbox with some of the tools that I like to use, but most of the guys who are really much deeper into this than me, if you see the kind of the rolling toolbox, it looks like a pretty good sized suitcase with the handle that comes up and you stack a couple of them up. These guys show up with parts and tools and pieces. But the tool thing is kind of fun too, because you'll get some device and it's kind of like, oh, I've got a tamper resistant screw here. You know, so a lot of those are like Torx heads with the little bump in the middle, so you can't use a regular Torx on it. Or there's a triangular shaped head with the same kind of a safety setup on it. And it just, you know, and somebody will pop up and say, oh, I've got a screwdriver that'll fit that. I got something that'll work with that. And then it kind of quickly turns into, you know, a community function of where did you get that? I need that. And, you know, so you quickly find references to lots of, lots of tools.
You have tool guys helping regular people, and then you have tool guys geeking out on the tools that other tool guys have. Yeah. And they're like, hey, wait a minute. Where did you find that? How do I get that? Oh, yeah, no, you can only get that at a certain – you can only get that at a certain place, or I got this as part of this tool set. Kevin, listen, we could do a whole – I don't know if you've – maybe you've kept up on this, but the concept of – toolboxes lately has gotten out of hand. Like Milwaukee and DeWalt have got into this space where interlocking toolboxes that are designed to go in a van and stick together, and you clamp them together and they stay on, and you can transport tools between two of them because they've got a transporter in them and little things for your hamsters to run on. I mean, the toolboxes have gotten the Milwaukee ones in particular have seemed to have gotten. I see a lot of electricians with these, where they're toolbox systems. You know, we used to just whatever we could get our hands on.
Yep,
we would, right. But now it's all color coordinated. I have like a bunch of drill bits, and then I've got a bunch of screwdriver. Fittings, whatever you call them, that go inside. You know, it's a system. Screwdrivers aren't screwdrivers anymore. They're systems, right?
Yep.
And those two boxes stack perfectly on top of the other, and you take the latch from one, hook it to the other, and they're hooked. Now it's a unit together. Like, this toolbox stuff's out of hand, Kevin. It's out of hand.
So, you know, on one hand, and what you're describing is a lot of what the guys who come to the Fix-It clinics have gone on their own.
They're rolling in a van worth of tools in a coordinated kit. It's crazy.
Well, and for folks who haven't, you know, so it how I got most of my tools was through need or want, desire, whatever. And then it's kind of like, all right, so what kind of a craftsman toolbox do I get? Or I need a bigger craftsman toolbox, or, you know, and like you say, now the toolboxes are, okay, here's your socket set that is custom designed to fit inside of here. And here's your screwdriver set, and here's your bit set. And all these things go, you know, very tightly inside of those. And Joe is right. Rigid boxes are very, good in those senses as well.
It's fun at Gallup, just as a side note, at Gallup, we have coaches, some of our certified coaches. I have one at Rigid, a few at Rigid. We've got some at DeWalt. I've seen some at Milwaukee. Like, it's fun to see them pop up and you're like, oh. So I've sent a few a note. I'm like, hey, big fan of your, and they're, you know, usually they send me the note. They're like, oh, hey, I've been listening to your, you know, to your podcast. And I'm like, oh, thank you. I send them a note back. I'm like, I use your tools. Thank you. I kind of geek out on them. And
well, and the tool thing, I see another aspect of it is for years, my cousin has worked for a company that builds agricultural harvesting equipment. So every week the Snap-on truck shows up, and Snap-on tools are expensive, but you know, the truck shows up every week. It's a lifetime warranty. And that's, you know, kind of a whole thing with Snap-on is the truck driver is actually like a broker for, well, hey, Mike, yeah. if you get that new toolbox, I can move your old toolbox, because that guy down the road, he's looking for it. And so, you know, they're wheeling and dealing all the time.
No, for sure. Yeah, they're finding another place for those. I'll get you this if you trade in your tools, and then they move those tools, right?
Yep.
Let's see. So Joe says inexpensive, but weather sealed. My tools are mostly DeWalt, but the rigid boxes are a lot cheaper.
Yep.
Yeah. Brian, thanks for checking in. Brian says, such an interesting conversation that makes me really think about all the electronic waste out there. Yeah. Could be fixed or repurposed. Yeah. I think we may, you know, Brian, to go back to what Kevin and I were talking about earlier, We may go into a phase. You know, Kevin, I was talking to a buddy of mine this morning just about this topic. When we go into, and listen, we're not into a recession yet. There's just threats of some of these things, but there's always a few things that pop up. And what made me think of that is he was like, hey, they're going to make a Yugo again, right? Well, you know, Yugos came out during that phase, you know, some financial struggles, and they were a super ultra cheap car during those times. And I think we're going to also see a move where we had gone to, you know, I think in the car space, we'd gone to ultra expensive. I mean, you know, most of these electric and most of some of the new cars, super expensive. We may get back to the era of cheap, you know, $20,000. Now that's not cheap for some people, but that's where we're at, right? $15,000 to $20,000 cars, if the economy here in the U.S. anyways, goes where it could go, kind of based on some of the current situations. So it's some of those kinds of things, right? And it, like car prices, I think we may see repurpose and reuse be a thing again, as folks struggle with both inflation and how to make things work. Joe says out in chat, bring back Datsun. Well, they got consumed by Nissan. And then, you know, we listen, I think cars were pretty reasonably priced up until the pandemic. And then, of course, that kind of messed stuff up and changed
things. And cars are interesting from that point of view as well. Is I've had, not to start brand arguments, but for me, Mazdas have been the most reliable cars I've had. So inevitably, because I've had to do very little maintenance on any of the Mazdas I've owned, I've just continually gone to the dealer for oil changes and whatever else. I grew up on a farm, and I've been a Ford truck guy for a lot of years, and I'm souring very quickly on Ford trucks. My 2010 is a traveling rust bucket. It's the first vehicle I ever had to replace the oil pan because it rusted out. Oh, no. And the dealer quoted me a price. I was like, no, I don't want a new engine. I just need the oil pan. He goes, oh, that's what it is. So at some point in time, you make the switch. And I've got a couple of local guys, a father and son team, who have been doing car repair for years, and they are very trustworthy. And their business is, you used to book out like a week with them. Now they're booking out 2 weeks or more because people are already starting to realize, hey, I got to get a few more miles out of this vehicle. When you mentioned a Yugo, I'm kind of interested to see, have you seen the Slate pickup truck?
Yeah, we talked about those a couple, maybe 3-4 weeks ago. Yeah, we talked
with the EV conversation.
And an Ed show.
I think that's kind of an interesting, you know, topic or conversation is, you know, I don't care if it looks really fancy. I don't care if it's got a ton of stuff in it. I just need four doors and four tires and away we go.
Yes, until you don't. That's one of the, right, you know, you're like, oh, you get into those situations and you're like, I got to roll the window down, I remember that Yugo phase that we went through, and everybody's like, oh yeah, yeah. But they were just the worst cars. Like, you're going to get 3 or 4 years, maybe, if you're lucky. Right. Kind of deal. So I don't know. I'm a little skeptical. I still think you get what you pay for in a lot of regards, but you and I have been doing this for a while. You see the cycles happen. And I think we're in this cycle of questioning. Sarah hasn't been working for a while. And so I'm like, well, okay, if we're going to do that, we're going to have to cut back on some things, you know, kind of deal. And I think a lot of folks are kind of prepping for that. I do feel like in 2024, we didn't believe it. So we just kept spending it's post-pandemic or whatever, when we just spent whatever we wanted to. We did whatever we want. Every restaurant was jammed, even though the prices were going skyrocket. And that's probably why they were, right? It's because everybody just kept spending and leaning into this kind of thing.
Yep.
So it'll be interesting to see where it goes. Hey, one more thing before we go. You gave me a link to this Steam Factory, which I find kind of interesting.
Yeah.
Let me throw it up on the screen. What's this all about?
So these are some folks. So actually, the potential lead in is the clip up above there is for, so a lot of the libraries up here, and I think your daughter talked about this a little bit, is the St. Paul Innovation Lab is based on the Maker's Market kind of thing. You know, they've got a whole bunch of laser printer or 3D printers, etchers, all kinds of things to use from innovation point of view. But they don't really teach you anything. They kind of expect that you're going to learn how to use these things and you just come to the library to use them. The Steam Factory is a group of folks who's trying to bridge the gap of, hey, come use our stuff if you're smart enough to design your own things and do your own 3D printing. Or on the other extreme, if you have a really good idea, come talk to us about it at Steam Factory. And we'll walk through, you know, can we teach, you know, so they teach classes and seminars to try and help people understand how to do design and how to do the CAD kind of work that would be involved in 3D printing and 3D design work. But also, if it's over your head, they have a team of designers who you can contract with if you want. So say you're, you know, so I think back to, and as I've been doing some house cleaning lately, I of course found something I was going to show at this show, and then I put it away someplace and I can't find it now. But it was the prototype of the Skoondoggy Rev 4 bracket for the HP Gen 8. And you know, for me, that was metal work, and that was really kind of, that was just kind of hit and miss of me trying some things. And I found a local sheet metal guy who would humor me and do, you know, 100 piece runs of these brackets. And then, you know, basically the Skoondoggy bracket, if you go out to some of these 3D printer sites, when I decided to quit making it, I gave away the specifications for it, all the drawings and everything for it. And two or three guys turned it into models for 3D printing. So you can basically go out and download the files and do a 3D print of a Skoondoggy bracket for a Gen 8 if you'd like. So they're all readily there. And 3D printing has come so far so fast that I think it's just kind of the expertise of things. The Steam Factory one as well, a friend of mine has gotten into more of the small form factor, single board Raspberry Pi kind of stuff. And those guys, you know, once again, so, you know, kind of the rack mounting aspect, I was blown away a little bit by the half rack size. So instead of being a 19 inch wide rack, it's about a 10 inch wide rack. And, real easy to 3D print. There's a lot of 3D designs out there for racks to mount in those that'll hold Raspberry Pis on their side. You can put four in a row on there, or a disk module to go inside of one of those. So it's getting to be, you know, a lot of the hobbyist aspect of things to help you get better organized with it is if you can't find something to rack this stuff up or case it up or put it up, just go make it.
In that Steam, what do we call it?
Steam Factory.
Steam Factory. Sorry, I want to call it steampunk, but that's something completely. That's something. This is my favorite class: design and wine, jewelry night. Right, unleash your inner designer in the most delightful way over wine, laughter, and the magic of 3D printing. Join us for this two-hour creative escape where you'll sip your favorite wine while learning to design custom jewelry using beginner-friendly 3D design tools. Whether you're making a statement ring, chick earrings, or unique pendants, our expert guided session will help you bring your vision to life. No experience needed, just good vibes, great company, and a passion for something beautifully different. Perfect. This is written really well. Perfect for girls' night out, date night, or a solo treat yourself evening. Come for wine, leave with wearable art, and maybe a few new friends. 2 hours, $60. That's not, I mean, to sit down, I got to do, listen, we have some of this in Omaha too.
Yep.
This is one of those things I need to do. I need to do more of these. Here's the thing. Like, these are real popular. Like, in some, yes. some of these, we, during the, maybe it was post-pandemic or pre, I can't remember. A lot of cooking classes at Metro, our community college. Super. There was like a waiting list to, and they were, these were not cheap nights. You know, you'd spend $120 or whatever, and they would cook these gourmet, or you would cook these gourmet meals or whatever. So they've gotten pretty popular. It is, you know, I don't know what the design and wine jewelry night, if it sells out or anything like that, but that sounds pretty cool. Like, I got to do more of that.
Oh, those kind of events, I think, are fun. That's a nice focus one. You mentioned the cooking one. I'm again now getting back into. We've got a couple of local, you know, their mainstay is selling pots, pans, cooking things, but they teach classes upstairs. Yeah. During the pandemic, when I was working, Dell was one of our biggest vendors, and they did one of those cooking classes remotely. Basically, I got a box the day before with all the stuff, and I learned, you know, I think I'm a pretty good cook, but I learned so much because this was like the head chef for all the Marriott restaurants. Oh, and wow. he's on my tablet telling me how, you know, how to make chimichurri butter and, you know, awesome. And little things like, you know, it sounds totally stupid now, but the number of times you go to finish a steak in the oven, and in hindsight with him, it was the first time that anybody had said, first thing you do before you do anything else is preheat the oven and put the cast iron pan in the oven. So it's getting really hot. Yeah, then pull it out, put it on the stove, sear them and throw it back in. Yeah. And it's so common sense now, but yet I was like, you know, poof. What a great idea.
I know. Isn't that great? It was just like when I learned to put, you know, seasoned butter on steak as you're finishing it up, you know, put that on there and let's just.
Yep.
I mean, that was just a new, that was not a Doris Collison method of my mother. First of all, we never had steaks. And when we did, it was a super occasion. They always dried them out and they were never very good. So, I think there's some great opportunities. It's good. You've given me a lot of things to think about here as we think about volunteering in the community or some things that you can do, or just some of the reuse stuff or how to use your talents. This may be one of those things. And I always say this, I need to get better at this, of finding that volunteer position that I go to once a month or twice a week or twice a month kind of thing, filling in and scratching that technology. It's just like cleaning up, going into the, asking the, I think it's Salvation Army, asking them, hey, can I just come in and clean up your, you know, clean up your technology area and make it make some sense? Cause you're driving me crazy. I don't want any of the stuff, but I want to tinker with it. I want to clean it up some. I want to make the valuable stuff more valuable for you so you can sell it, you know, kind of thing. My problem is I may come home with it more of it than I.
Yeah. Have. Well, right. Well, an interesting side with that too is a couple of the fix-it guys from these fix-it clinics, they're notoriously bad about picking up stuff and then taking it home and then fixing it. But the good side of that is then they use something like one of the buy nothing groups to give it away. So they got it for nothing. They enjoyed fixing it and making it work, and then they're giving it to somebody who can actually use it.
That's a great idea. That is a great idea. Even on the buy nothing of saying, hey, if you want to donate your items, we'll try to fix them and then put them back on the, in this network.
Yeah. You know? And there's
Facebook for that. There's buy nothing groups on Facebook. Yep. And is that kind of what you're thinking?
That's where I've been using it, is through Facebook, the buy nothing groups. The other aspect of that, and I think, you know, again, charitable things, here in the Twin Cities, we have a group called Bridging that focuses on, families or individuals and, you know, helping them get into their first apartment. And so what they take for donations is, you know, good used furniture, kitchen appliances, plates, dishes, all those kind of things. And one of the guys from the Fix-It Clinic had, fans are another big thing we get at fix it clinics. In 9 times out of 10, the reason it's not turning is it needs 2 drops of oil on the motor and it'll take right off and go again. Yeah. So he brought in a whole bunch of fans, and during downtime at one of the clinics, we all went through and cleaned up and fixed up all these, you know, fans, little tabletops to bigger units. And I finally said, hey, Howard, what are you going to do with these? And he goes, oh, I put them on my car and take them over to bridging and they give them away. And so it's that I just took something that didn't work. I enjoyed with a bunch of folks fixing it and getting it working. And now it's going to some people who can use it.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a great idea. But you got me thinking too about, you know, going to a thrift store, buying something that's maybe questionable or needs just a little bit of TLC. Fixing it up and then throwing it on mm-hmm. Buy Nothing or whatever, or maybe even connecting, you know, in your case. So every summer here, I don't know about where you're at, but every summer we'll do, fans for old people or fans mm-hmm. for people who need them. Right. Kind of thing. Like when it starts getting really hot. And so you could get out ahead of that and find some thrift stores and pick up those fans for nothing, get them working well, and then redonate them back or whatever, like whatever you're thinking. I would even, if you like shopping, but you don't need anything, visit your local thrift stores and put together, you're talking about people moving into apartments, put together, try to find silverware and get it all, get enough of a like kind, right. Mm-hmm. Find a plate set that works well together. Some of those kinds of things. I think that could be I go to those thrift stores, they just have a ton of stuff.
Oh man.
They just have tons. And you're like, man, if somebody could organize this thing.
Yeah.
And maybe that's an AI function. Like imagine if it was coming in and you had the AI take a picture of it and then say in the area, match all this stuff up.
Whatever. Sure.
Anyways. Yeah. Well, interesting. Kevin, anything else from, I think we got through most of your notes here. Anything?
Yeah,
anything
I think we hit
before we close it up. I think we got it all. Amazing how that happens. It's like we plan it that way.
The conversation just flows, Jim.
Oh, it's always good. It's always good. Kevin, thanks for taking the time tonight to be a part of it. Thanks. Hey, listen, thanks for being my friend over the last.
Absolutely.
We've been doing this 15 years.
Maybe. It's got to be close. If you want to know for sure, just go out to YouTube and search for Average Guy Home Gadget Geeks Windows Phone, because that was the first podcast you and I did together.
Yeah. Oh, man. That's crazy. Yeah. But I think I may have known you before that. Listen, you've been kind enough. I was talking about doing some server stuff, and you sent me some Dell monster servers. Right? They were monster. I had no idea what I was getting myself into. Turn those things on and the lights dimmed. And then most recently, I'm still using, I've got some, 3 bay 3 to 5, right? So it's a 3 bay, converts it into 5 drives, got a fan behind it. Those are running right now. Those are right behind me, still running. I got drives in them and mining some stuff on Chia. And, so thank you for that. I mean, just thanks for being a good friend over the years. I appreciate it. Thanks for being a friend of the network, a friend to us all, as we think about going back to the home server show days and all the things we did together during those meetups, and then continuing it with a conversation tonight about how to stay community involved in some of these things and take it to the next level. So can you stay around for a few minutes as I close it up?
Absolutely.
Okay. Awesome. Couple reminders. On the way out, if you want to join the Discord group, and Kevin's in the Discord group, you can ask him questions about how to fix things. I hadn't ever thought about a toaster or a ninja toaster asking you how to fix that, but maybe in our Discord group, Kevin can now have you need that 10 millimeter unlimiter, whatever thing to get that done. You can, he's in our Discord group. Scoondoggy is his name over there. theaverageguy.tv/Discord. If you want to jump in there, that'd be kind of fun. Maybe we should make a channel of a fix it questions channel where you can jump in there. And if you're interested in that, jump into Discord and let me know and I'll make that channel. TheAverageGuy.tv platform, both web and media hosting, powered by Maple Grove Partners. You know that's Christian. Get high-speed, reliable hosting from people that you know and you trust. And I think he's still doing plans at $10. I need to get him. I say this every week. I need to get. I'm going to hit him tonight after we're done. I'm going to send him an email. Say, Christian, when are you coming back? MapleGrovePartners.com. If you need hosting, he's the guy to go to. If you want to contact me, you can send me an email, Jim@TheAverageGuy.tv. And I'd love to hear from you. It's just nice every once in a while if we're doing the thing that we're doing. It's, you know, it's a variety show here. So, and I'm always interested in your topics. And Kevin, I didn't think I'd ever get a fix it show out of you, but hey, that's where you're at. So thanks for, and thanks for bringing up, you know, I remember those days on Home Server Show when we were talking about your, you know, your bracket for the Gen 8, super popular in those days. I don't, mm-hmm. you think people still running Gen 8 servers out there?
There are still some alive. they're getting pretty long in the tooth, but you see some out there. And actually, it's got to be about 2 years ago, a friend of mine sent me a link, and he goes, "Hey, you're living in infamy." There was a Gen 8 microserver on eBay, and it specifically had to point out that it had a Scoondoggy bracket in it.
Nice. Now, those brackets, just for folks who weren't alive during those days, those brackets held two additional hard drives. Is that
two or four? We were okay. able to get four in there with the stackers. So 2.5 inches.
There was this space in there that was not being used, and we needed the Gen 8 held four. Or five.
Held four drives up front, and and then with the bracket,
four more on the side.
Yep,
with the bracket.
Yeah, two and a half inch drives. So.
And you would need a new card too. You'd have to put one of those LSI cards right in there to get it. And then 2.5 inch drives, and as opposed to the 5.25 inch drives that I said 2 weeks ago. Again, sorry, I apologize for getting the drive size wrong. I feel like such an idiot. I've only been doing this for like 15 years. And for some reason I called them 5.25 the whole time. Well, all right, we'll get over it. It does happen. You lose your mind every once in a while. For me, it's happening maybe a little more often than it should. We are live every Thursday, 8 p.m. Central. No, 7 p.m. Central now. Said that a million times. 7 p.m. Central, 8 Eastern out here at theaverageguy.tv/live. We've got some shows coming up. You may want to join us next week. Mike Wieger is back. I should check with him just to be clear. Maybe that's another email I sent tonight just to make sure he's good for next week. So Mike's coming on for 650. And then I got Dave Hamilton coming from Mac Geek Geb. Dr. Brian Friedlander, who has been on a bunch of times talking about accessible tech. We'll be back here later in August. So we got some shows coming up for you. Love to have you join us for the live show. If you're listening on the podcast, come out on a Thursday night. It'd be fun. Brian, Joe, Ken was out here a little bit earlier. Thanks for coming out tonight. A few more we got missed, but maybe not. With that, we'll say goodbye, everybody.